Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris. You're Alec Whipple. And the rest of you, I hope, have not deemed the season over for the 15 and 14 New York Yankees who are, and Hopo, my grandmother, I know you're listening. You might want to cover your ears for this part. Tied for last in the American League East with the Boston Red Sox. That's kind of a tough one, Whipple. I'm not going to lie. It was a disappointing week, the worst week of the season. I think the second worst week in Yankees Files history, or tied for second worst at 2-5. Have we had a winless week? I don't think we've had a winless week. I know there's a 1-6 in 2021 after they got swept by the Tigers. So it was a bad week. A bad week full of bad games, full of bad play, full of bad news. You know, between the injuries to Aaron Judge and Jake Bowers, who was called up to kind of reset the outfield stuff, and then, you know, a bad start from Nestor, some very bad offense. Things really didn't go well this week, Whipple, and I got a lot of flack, I would say, on Twitter for encouraging people to remain positive, and I'm going to continue to do that. I'm not going to let this episode be a funeral, certainly not with a team that's above 500 at the end of April. It's just not going to happen. But how are you feeling?
Well, there's an old baseball saying, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes it rains. It didn't rain this week. The Yankees lost a few
games. Not rain.
I don't really know where I was going with that, but I just like really, I always think of that saying when it's like, you know what? Like, I think the larger point of the saying holds, and that like baseball is baseball, and like sometimes it's not going to be good and sometimes it is going to be good, and the good teams will play poorly and they're never going to be as bad as they look when they're bad. And we've seen this happen with every Yankees team, you know, pretty much except for maybe like the 1998 Yankees, and even they started off 1-4. But the point is, this team is not irredeemable, and yes, it had a bad week, but I think there's a lot of reasons that, one, saying they're in last place, you know, overlooks that the last place team in every other division is a lot worse. So the quality of this team, while it is...
It overlooks that the American League East just had the best month in the history of five-team divisions.
Right. So American League East is good. The Yankees have played pretty much teams that are all above 500, like consistently some of the best teams in the game. One of the toughest schedules. They're doing it down a bunch of players, and obviously the losses count. The wins and the losses are there, but we've seen teams a lot worse than this finish a lot better than this, and there's nothing in my mind that says the Yankees cannot finish better. They can't overcome this poor week of baseball, and I know it's like, I get the frustration of just saying the injured guys have to come back, but it's to some extent true, and to some extent, the guys on the field are not going to be playing as poorly as they are playing, and I think you have a lot you want to say about, you know, who's actually playing poorly, and I agree with it. Like, I think, I won't steal your thunder, but I think people, you know, like, again, I said this last week, but the problems with last year's team when it was playing poorly are that there were guys locked into that lineup who are never going to leave that lineup, and it's just not the case this year. I mean, I think the single biggest difference, even though the quality of this team might be worse right now than the quality of the 2022 Yankees, is that the guys who should be playing are usually playing. And right now that means they're not that good because they're just not a lot of good guys on the team. But when the good guys come back, like we have seen, that everyone will slide back into their roles. And that means Aaron Hicks and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and hopefully Josh Donaldson will not be playing as much baseball. And I think that's a huge difference. And so kicking it back to you to share your point, I don't think the failures of this team can be, you know, ascribed to just we're running it back. I don't think the same issues plague this team. And I think
that
leads to a lot more optimism. So I know you have a lot of comments about that. I won't steal your thunder.
Yeah. So after I turned off the game this afternoon, which I think was when the Rangers scored their 12th run, I started to, I believe I said I was compiling some data. And there are two questions that I looked at. One question was, like, did Yankees teams that ended up winning the World Series ever play poorly? Which seems like a simple enough question. I only looked at a few recent teams. So let's talk about this. Through 29 games, the 2009 Yankees were 14-15. Current Yankees are 15-14. That team got to 15-17, and that was on May 12th after a loss where they got just completely dominated by Roy Halladay. And then they started to turn things around, but they were 15-17. They were under 500 through 32 games. They had lost games in which they, up to that point, they had lost games in which they allowed 12 runs, 16 runs, 22 runs, 10 runs, 10 runs, 15 runs. I mean, they had a 15-5 in there. They had a 22-4 in there. Like, it was really bad. There was not a lot that gave you confidence, you know, short of the expectation that A-Rod would be returning and, you know, the fact that he then kind of was a spark. But, you know, things were not good at the beginning of that season for that team. Chenming Wong was cooked. CeCe Sabathia hadn't, you know, hit his stride yet. The back of the rotation was a concern. Cody Ransom and Brett Gardner and Xavier Nady, who then got hurt, were playing a bunch of games. Like, there was not a lot to be optimistic about. And they obviously turned it around. They were the best team in baseball, and they won the World Series. The win totals for 2009 of the team that the teams that the 2009 Yankees played on their way to 14-15, 64, 65, 65, 75, 84, 86, 95, and 97. That's 79 wins on average for those teams that they played at the beginning of that season. And teams that destroyed them. I mean, they lost the series to Baltimore. They won 64 games. They got destroyed by Cleveland, including 10-2 and 22-4. That team won 65 games. Like, you want to talk about looking non-competitive? Nick Swisher was pitching against Tampa. Yeah, it was. It got, like, disgusting. So, like, that team started off looking like absolutely nothing special, and they figured it out. In 2000, that team won the World Series. They started 20-9. That team finished with a record of 87-74, which means they played their last 132 games at 67-65. They played at a worse pace than what the Yankees are currently playing at for 132 games, the final 132 games of the season, and they won the World Series. In 1996, they were 62-40 on July 27th. They played their last 60 games of the season at exactly 500 and then won the World Series. Like, that is 60 games at a worse winning percentage than the Yankees have played their first 29 this year. In 2000, it was 132 games at a worse winning percentage than the Yankees have played their first 29 this year. In 2009, it was 29 games or 32 games below 500 before they really turned things around. And people have deemed the season over with a team that is down two of its top three starters and either its two best hitters or two of its three best hitters. It's insane to me. Especially with, you know, the way that they're investing in young talent and the fact that you obviously have to wait for those guys to develop. It's ridiculous. So I just wanted to remind people, and like the response that I feel like I get when I put stuff like that out there is, oh, those teams were special. They won the World Series. Yeah, but you didn't know when the 2000 Yankees were only winning 87 games in the entire season, which would be the Yankees' worst single season number since 2016, that they were going to win the World Series. You didn't know when the 1996 Yankees were finishing the season 30-30 that they were going to win the World Series. You didn't know, especially in 2009, coming off a missed playoffs, that the team that was 15-17 was going to turn it around and win 103 games and win the World Series. You absolutely didn't know that. You could only be confident in it and believe in the players and believe that the team would succeed. And I just think that anyone, and I tweeted this today, like, if you have already deemed the season over and condemned this team this far into the season, like, I don't relate to you and I'm not going to entertain your takes. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I think the worst take is the one not even related to play, but just like this team is not fun to watch. And like, okay, could no one's fun to watch when they're losing baseball games. Like, newsflash, yeah, there's never been a losing team where everyone's like, wow, this team is so fun to watch. Like, even the, you know, the 2000, the 2017 Yankees, which, you know, probably is like some people's favorite team who listen to this podcast, like, absolutely, I think would not be remembered the same way if they just lost that wild card game. It's only, you know, like, it's when they go on a, you know, a slide in the middle of the season, they,
the 2017 team won fewer games in the regular season than the 2021 team, who everyone just hates.
Right. And I get it's a different team, but like, the only reason people like that team is because they finished strong. They won a lot of games. Like, in the middle of that year, people were calling for Girardi's head. I mean, it's the same old story. Mm-hmm. People are not going to like a team when they're losing. It doesn't mean the team is unlikable. They have bad vibes. It's just like, this team is not in a position to win right now, or they're struggling, or they're in a slump. And it's not a character judgment. And it's just annoying because, like, you already know they're going to get better. And you already know that those people are going to come back on the bandwagon and say, my God, this team's so fun to watch. Like, Judge, Stanton, Cole, Severino. Like, it's the same team. Like, nobody, they didn't just all, like, decide that they were going to be happy. It's winning teams are happy. Like, it does it. Yeah. Like, that's the most annoying thing. And it's just like, people are frustrated. That's fine. I get it. But it's no need to, like, I mean, throw like a temper tantrum because of some losing some games in April. It is a long season. I mean, we've said this a lot, and like, in the life of Yankees Files, I mean, both those teams made the playoffs and had success at various points in the regular season. And I think both those teams were written off at certain points because of their long losing streaks. No, they didn't win the World Series, but like, they put themselves in a position to, especially 2022, when that team was slumping really hard. I mean, look at the end of 2022. Look at those July and August months. If those were the first 2 months of the season, and then that team turned around,
oh my, people would not have been able to handle it.
Yeah, it would be so different. So, like, it's, yeah, it's the baseball. It's I don't have a better answer than that. Like,
I'd also point out that, like, the 2005 Yankees, who won 95 games and won the AL East, were 11-19 at one point.
2007 Yankees.
They started the
started
the season 11-19. The 2007 Yankees were 21-29. 21-29. That's through 50 games. They were like a 400 team, and they won 94 games. Like, it's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. So the other thing, the other narrative that I've been kind of reacting against, because I understand the frustration that people have when they see a lineup and they see Willie Calhoun or Aaron Hicks or IKF, or they see, you know, that Oswaldo Cabrera isn't producing, or they see the catcher position and they're not getting production there. And they see those spots and they focus on them and they say, that's why the team is losing. Because there's not enough depth at those positions, and that's making the team lose. And I don't think that's actually right. And so I looked into, you know, my feeling has been that this team will do well when the big bats are hitting well, even if Judge and Stanton aren't in the lineup, and they'll do poorly when the big bats are doing poorly, you know, even with Judge and Stanton in the lineup. And one thing that's been really bad for the Yankees this year is the good guys have been good at the same time and bad at the same time. And you would like if there were some more variability in when guys were slumping. And they haven't had that. So Gleyber, through game one of the Cleveland series, had a 247 WRC plus. He has a 53 WRC plus since then. DJ had a 150 WRC plus through the end of the first Minnesota series. He has a 78 WRC plus since then. Rizzo had a 191 WRC plus through the end of the Angels series. He has a 43 WRC plus since then. Judge had a 225 WRC plus through the end of the Baltimore series. It was 88 since then, and then he got hurt. Stanton was a 135 WRC plus bat in his only 54 plate appearances. So when your good hitters get bad, hurt, or both at the same time, the team is going to do poorly. And the reason I know this is correct is because you look at the rest of the guys. Oswaldo Cabrera, 47 WRC plus in his first 55 plate appearances through game two against the Angels. Awful. 24 WRC plus since then. Still awful. Hicks, 5 through the end of the Angels series, 23 since then. Awful to awful. Higgy, 65 through the end of the Angels series, 46 since then. Awful, awful. Trevi, 91 through the end of the Baltimore series, pretty good, 67 since. Awful. Like, the spots in the lineup that people are mad about are not the spots in the lineup that were ever driving run creation. Like, this team had a 14-8 Pythagorean record through 22 games and a 13-9 record, and they were doing that in spite of the fact that the same lineup spots that aren't hitting today weren't hitting then. The difference was the big bats were producing. And that's why when I see people say that it doesn't feel like there's a clear path out of this for the Yankees, I couldn't disagree more. If you had a lineup with Gleyber, Rizzo, and DJ all hitting, and like a league average Harrison Bader, you're good enough. Like, you're good enough to win games. You're more than good enough to win games until Judge is back, whether it's a short IL stint or just a couple more days off. You're more than good enough to win games until Stanton comes back. You're more than good enough to win games until Volpe starts to find his level in the big leagues. You're more than good enough to win games until you see what you have in Cabrera or Peraza. Like, this is what really gets to me, is people are just missing the boat on what has caused the Yankees to struggle to score runs. And once you realize that it's the big bats not hitting and the big bats that you should be believing in, then it's just hard to be so negative and to see this like tumble continuing. And it makes you more willing to say, okay, I can see how this team is going to, you know, pull itself out of this slump.
Yeah, I still maintain that people need to forget about the 2018-2019 lineups, because that's not happening, and that doesn't define a good lineup if you it's circular and everyone can hit 20 home runs. Absolutely. Like, would you like to be in that situation? But the Yankees have proven, the Yankees have proven that this lineup, they've proven it this year. The current lineup is good enough at full strength. And that doesn't mean everyone has to hit 20 to 30 home runs. But it does mean, like you said, the big bats have to be there and have to be producing. And you know what? Like, I would love to have a team, again, I'd love to have a team where everyone's hitting 20 to 30 home runs. I'd love to have a team where, like, the 26th man is, like, an above-average major leaguer. But that's never how it works, even on the good teams. Yeah. I mean, if I want to go on my own, you know, go back through Yankees history, I could pull up every single year the Yankees have won the division, made the playoffs, and look at the last bench guy, and it's probably someone that Yankees fans would rather not be reminded of. I mean, that's just always how it is. So I think, yeah, I think people are frustrated overall, but like, and I think you kind of said, somebody said that, somebody running this account said that, when like people or some accounts were complaining about, you know, how could the Yankees not go and upgrade the bench or whatever? Like, there's not, it's not like they're going to pay. Like, having Matt Carpenter was like an absolute steal, a once in a lifetime situation. You're not going to be able to find that guy and say, come sit on our bench. Like, that's the, either luck into that stuff, or you settle for the quality of a bench spot, which is usually less than people would like it to be. And again, it's not going to the Yankees aren't going to go on a run. And this is, again, where I think people need to forget 2019, because that situation is not going to happen. The Yankees are not going to have all their backups turn into stars. It's just not going to happen. I think this team, again, has proven success with this lineup. And they're going to go as far as Judge, Rizzo, Stan, Torres, LeMahieu take them. And right now, that's obviously not very far. But, like, it not, is not is so far from permanent. And it's going to turn around very quickly. I think perspective is needed, and just forgetting about their, you know, what your ideal baseball lineup looks like, what your ideal bench looks like. I guarantee that successful teams find a way to win with a lot less, and the Yankees definitely have all that they need to win.
It's also just like people are taking victory laps about saying like the Yankees needed to upgrade the offense more, when what those people were talking about is like the Yankees signing Jurickson Profar. Like, that's the thing that gets to me, is like, first of all, if everyone were producing at the level they'll produce at over a large enough sample right now, like, no one would be worried at all. We'd just be
also
saying,
Jurickson Profar is hitting 216 with a 643 OPS in Colorado. So
exactly.
There you go. Like, people would be mad about that.
It's that's what gets to me is there's this like, oh my gosh, the Yankees needed to make upgrades and they didn't. Like, this team had the best run differential in the American League. They scored the most runs in the American League. Like, last year's offense was good. Like, and the idea that they would have the audacity to believe that the kids that they called up would get better with more Major League Baseball experience, or that, like, Glaber, DJ, and Rizzo wouldn't all go into catastrophic slumps at the same time while they're all perfectly healthy. Like, my God, how preposterous of them. Like, it's ridiculous. It's tiresome.
Right. And people are like, I'm dreaming on an outfield with Judge, Dominguez, and Spencer Jones. Well, you know what? If you want to get to that outfield, you have to go through stuff like this.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. You can't have it both ways. Again, Aaron Judge's 2017 Major League debut, which, you know, I obviously he played a month in 2016 and people are, you know, not going to pay attention to that. Like, starting off like Aaron Judge did is not the norm. Starting off like Volpe is probably more in line. A very valuable player who is finding his way.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Whipple, I think it's time for us to switch up the vibes here. So we at long last had one of kind of like the key behind the scenes figures in Yankees files, in the Yankees.
The friend of the pod.
Exactly. Kind of the quintessential friend of the pod we had on the podcast finally. And that's Matt Harris, one of my best friends from college, a huge Yankee fan. And, I had a ton of fun interviewing him. You know, Matt is, as passionate as it gets for a Yankee fan. He is encyclopedic in his knowledge. He has been to, you know, probably more games than you and I combined. And it's just a ton of fun to talk Yankees with him. So without any further ado, let's throw it to our interview with Matt Harris. All right. And we are back. We are joined by, for the second week in a row, I think it's the second week in a row, a first time guest on the Yankees Files podcast. This time, not someone you may have seen on Yankees Twitter, but someone you may know if you're from Staten Island. A close friend of mine from college, Hell Yeah Not Hall. Everybody, it's Matt Harris. Matt, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hello, my alleged brother and also Alec Whipple.
We were often thought to be brothers or otherwise related in some way in our dorm.
The first time I met you, I thought you were cousins. I thought, because I think you were bringing him to my holiday party. I'm like, oh, yep. You're bringing your cousin. That's great. Lovely.
No, not cousins, not brothers, but often mistaken to be so. Matt, let's start kind of with the biggest possible picture. You are one of the biggest Yankees fans that I know. It is the basis of our friendship. It was the thing that we bonded over in college. Talk to us a little bit about your history with the Yankees, how you became a fan, your experiences with the team growing up. Just let us in on the life of Matt Harris and your existence as a fan.
Yeah, so grew up in Staten Island, as you had mentioned, huge Yankees fan. My uncle had season tickets, so we used to go probably 5 times a year when I was younger at the old stadium. And then all throughout high school, then I guess college in the summers, would just kind of go to Yankees games here and there throughout. I watch most of the games, as we will get into my gripes with the Yes streaming app in coming up. But yeah, I watch pretty much all the games. As you had alluded to, I lived in the DMV the previous 2 years. So in addition to attending some games at Camden Yards, I also attended Alec Whipple's Christmas party.
Which was a great time.
When I cut my finger open.
That did happen. That did happen.
Yes. And yes, now I am living in the Metroplex.
The Metroplex.
Yes,
the DFW Metroplex.
Metroplex.
Hey, we all were at the Nationals Brewers game, was it last year, when Soto, Bell, and Cruz went back to back to back. So It's another Matt Harris highlight moment.
And let's not forget Mark Mathias hit his first career home run in that game.
True. That's what you don't forget.
Who could forget?
I certainly couldn't. I saw Miguel Andujar go yard at the Nats game yesterday. That was pretty crazy.
What a time.
I
follow the baseball home run tracker on Twitter, and I saw Andujar hit his second, and I said, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely good for him. Should have been rookie of the year.
You get a Nationals fedora?
I did not get a Nationals fedora. I was probably too late for the giveaway, but evidence of any Nationals fedoras, I will say.
One of the best giveaways I had ever gotten was at an Orioles game. It was an Orioles bucket hat sponsored by Miller Lite, and that is a good possession that I own.
That's Matt Harris photos. So Matt, one game as JT Realmuto goes yard to tie the Phillies with the Houston Astros. The Houston Astros, a team with fewer wins than the New York Yankees. Matt, one game that you and I were at together was the game that has probably been most discussed on Yankees Files.
It was discussed last weekend.
The Gary Sanchez fields the wild pitch for Aroldis Chapman off the backstop, yes. Throws out Tony Kemp at third base, Gleyber Torres walk-off game. I've often cited that as probably the best game I've ever attended. I know you have a pretty extensive list of games and of notable games that you've attended. I'd love to know what you rank as the best one.
So it's funny you mentioned that. As I was driving to Globe Life Field on Thursday night, I was listening to the podcast as a primer.
Thank you.
As I was waiting to merge onto Interstate 30 from the George Bush Turnpike,
oh yeah,
I was trying to list in my head the best Yankee games I had been to. So I was at that game with you where Gleyber hit the walk-off.
Yep.
I was also at Alec Whipple's favorite game, Hideki Matsui Day, where Alfonso Soriano mm-hmm. went 4-for-4. Derek Jeter hit his only home run of the season. And you even got to see Mariano Rivera in his last season get the win.
Pretty good. Pretty good, I would say.
Yeah, Soriano walk-off single. I feel like, yeah, Matt, you're the singularity. You have been at each of our favorite games. Yeah.
And the other one I'd like to mention is back when my uncle had season tickets in 2005, we went to a Yankees Devil Rays game. And the Yankees were down like 8-0 and then proceeded to hit like a gazillion home runs and won 20-10 or 20-11, something like that.
And that game was the day before the first Yankee game that I ever went to, that my grandparents took me to. It was the day before, and they didn't take batting practice the next day because of all the runs they scored the night before.
And it was raining because I was also at that game.
Yep. Yeah, Matt really is the singularity. It's kind of wild.
Wait, Matt, were you at the Gleyber Torres walk-off in 2019 against the Blue Jays? Or
No, 2019 I definitely wasn't because I wasn't in the New York area.
I was pushing my luck there.
Hashtag
like, if you were at my two favorite games, that would be too much.
I do want to give a shout-out to one other game that I attended.
Please.
Not a Yankees game, but in 2019, friend of the program, Kevin Moss, and I went to
Kevin has never listened to this podcast. I just want that to be clear.
We went to a Dodgers Rockies game in Chavez Ravine, and it was Nolan Arenado hit a home run. Charlie Blackman hit a home run. I think Bellinger hit a 2-run home run for the Dodgers.
Son of Clay.
Walker Buehler pitched a complete game. He struck out the side in the 9th inning to get to like 17 strikeouts for the game. And then Beatty hit a walk-off 2-run home run to send everyone home. And Walker
That's ridiculous. That's insane. So Matt, that's actually a good transition. One notable thing about you is you've been to a ton of ballparks, and not only major league ballparks, but primarily. So defunct and active, what is your current total number of major league ballparks visited?
So it's 26 total, 22 current. I have been to the ones that are defunct are Yankee Stadium, Shea, Turner Field, where I caught a Freddie Freeman home run. notably on television. I will find the video so that you could clip that with the on Twitter.
And I will.
And you and I famously, in 110 degree heat, went to the Bartolo Colon Rangers game at what is now Choctaw Stadium.
Something that I look back on with regret was my like ironic excitement about Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, because I thought his name was hilarious. And we went to that game and IKF was there and Bartolo Colon was pitching and it was just like one big meme. And now IKF has gotten like more play on this podcast than anyone because of the way he's ruined my life for the last year and a half.
Yes. But yes, I will be going to two new stadiums this year. As I live in the Metroplex, I think I'm going to find a time to go down to Cheatersville in yep. Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I embrace debate. I do agree with me. It's a valid idea that I'm specifically will not go to a Yankees game there because I don't want the headache.
Yes, absolutely valid. I think that's the right approach.
Also going to go to a Cardinals game at some point this summer because one of my friends lives there.
Very nice. So Matt, you were at a couple games of this recent series loss to the Rangers. And let's start with the good. In the first game that you attended, Aaron Judge was playing baseball. Gleyber Torres and DJ LeMahieu hit back-to-back home runs. DJ basically hit his right at you.
Yes.
You saw Aaron Hicks get a hit. You saw Jose Trevino hit a home run. I mean, the odds of all of those things happening in a game are astronomical. And there you were experiencing them. And you saw Heen Dog versus Gerrit Cole. I mean, that's just an unbelievable day.
Yeah, going to a Heen Dog bump day was not what I had in mind. But yeah, getting to see Gerrit Cole shove was fantastic.
So, Matt, I know you've been a pretty active Aaron Hicks hater, and you've had some time to see him this weekend. Do you have any redeeming thoughts about Aaron Hicks? I mean, I feel like we're all struggling for positives here. What was the catch? I didn't see the catch. I saw the highlights of that catch on Saturday, but I know you weren't at that game. But like, is there any evidence of life here with him?
So I was at the game Thursday, which he famously missed a ball hit right at him. That he just decided to not put his glove up. And yeah, no, there no redeeming qualities. Although I did see him get a hit in both games I attended.
That's true. You might be the only person on the planet who can say that this year.
Yeah. Yeah, he is tough. He needs to be just take him out behind the shed and DFA him.
Blessedly, Harrison Bader will be back soon. And hopefully Jake Bowers is fine or something. I don't know, man. If things are getting bleak. Matt, so people may not know this. People probably don't know this. But you have been a very active participant in the kind of behind-the-scenes workings of Yankees Files.
The game within the game.
You are, you know, you're in a group chat with the two of us. You are often someone we go to for thoughts. You are never shy to provide them. I remember, you know, as far back as when I started the blog, you know, asking you for comments on things. And I know you have a number of takes about a whole variety of things.
It's all over the map.
From the rule changes to the commercials that they air on the Yes app to, you know, any number of other things. So I know you have a list there. Let's just let you get out and run and throw out some takes because we know you have them.
Yeah. 2 years in the making right here.
This is.
So for, I guess I should start. For those of you who don't know, every once in a while when Yankees Files posts a meme, it's I'm the one who made it.
That is true. That is true.
Yes.
It's but not infrequent, actually.
Yeah. So my first take that I had, which aged very poorly, was Thursday night when I was at the game. I just wrote down, and this was the first four innings, as I was in the 10th row in right field, I wrote, the man is large.
And look, you know what? I think that take did age well, because even though Aaron Judge hurt his hip, he did not get smaller, to our knowledge.
Yes.
All so of I think he is indeed large. I think that holds up.
Yeah. All of a sudden, a much smaller man was running out, and the entire section was very confused.
Yeah. I think we got a text from you that just said, Cabrera? Like, incredulously?
But yes. My next take, we already covered, but it's that Aaron Hicks is the worst baseball player ever. We already covered that one.
It's not good.
Another thing came from today. Rangers captain, worst mascot in Major League Baseball. He is really useless. He only comes out before the game and after the game. Just awful mascot.
Whipple, correct. You seem taken aback by that take. Do you have a different opinion on the worst mascot in baseball?
I just feel like, I don't know. I didn't have such... my thing is, like, I don't like... what's the Astros one?
Orbit?
Or I don't like Orbit, and I don't know. Bloopers, like, a little too much. But, like, I don't feel like I have any, like, strong mascot opinions. I just think I was surprised by, like, somebody labeling a mascot the worst in baseball.
This is what Matt's here for.
Like, the Rangers would be, like, it would be net neutral not having a mascot.
Yeah, and it becomes negative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm open to that. I also heard recently from a friend who was at a game in Toronto that the Blue Jays mascot sucks, and I'm open to that.
Is he fat?
Is he... is the probably mascot just is. Alec Manoah?
He fits on the team in that way.
But yes, next, I have some gripes about the YES Network app. So please, one is that every other week they log me out. And it's just like, you know, now at least, like, you scan the QR code. So, like, I just have to take my phone, scan it, log in with the TV information. I will say the best app that, like, I log in with my parents' cable, not blacked out at all. Like, I could watch the games here in Texas while, like, great. I don't know how they worked around MLB's blackout rules, but great job, YES Network, on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The next is, and I think a lot of listeners of this podcast may agree with this, is that we need to talk about the YES Network commercials. So
this has been a recurring theme in the group chat that we have with Matt since sometime last year. And what it's important that people understand is Whipple and I are both MLB.TV users. And what that means is we don't get the same commercials that air on the YES app. So there were times when Matt would say, oh my God, it's sunshine on my shoulders again, or we fixed this toilet is going to play in my nightmares, or what, you know, whatever it might have been. And we could not relate. But then I would either seek them out so I could commiserate with Matt, or while I was watching the NFL draft this past weekend, we fixed this toilet played, and I sent Matt a text in haste because I finally understood what was bothering him. So Matt, with that preface, please go ahead.
Yeah. So I have a power ranking of the three worst commercials, in my opinion.
Amazing.
And if you asked me last year, Sunshine on My Shoulders was the worst one. It was every commercial break, the saddest commercial. No one needed to be that sad.
But agreed.
Every commercial break. But they phased that out this year. I know they play it every once in a while, but it's not nearly as frequent. However, this year, We Fix This Toilet is the single worst commercial ever made for any, like, ever. Like, it's just... The first time it's like, oh, that's funny. It's We Fixed This City, which is a terrible song. We Built This City, which is a terrible song.
Shout out Starship. Shout out Jefferson Starship. Shout out Jefferson Airplane. Shout out, if they really wanted to be symmetrical about it, the band should have just originally been called Airplane. Please continue.
Shout out Kevin Moss, who that's his favorite Moss. Song.
So we Fixed This Toilet is a terrible, terrible commercial and shouldn't be allowed to exist. It is like the bizarro version of Scoop, There It Is.
It's like the furthest thing from Scoop, There It Is.
Exactly.
Scoop, There It Is, goated.
Yeah, 100%.
So I would say we fix this toilet is number one, the worst commercial. Number two is Sunshine on My Shoulders. Number three, they used to play the TikTok Taught Me commercial every single break. And I hated that one too. Like, this is how you debone a chicken wing. I don't just eat your chicken wing.
just do it. And then like the lineup was brought to us by TikTok. Shout out TikTok Taught Me. And it was like, come on, man. Like, what are we doing here? I feel you. I absolutely feel you.
Yeah.
I will say, I just had to shout out the MLB TV commercials, because over here on MLB TV, we listened to Tim Anderson walking off the Field of Dreams game and Vlad Guerrero hitting his third home run against the Yankees. And it seemed like baseball's end is just targeting Yankees fans. And then when that doesn't happen, you get like the COVID Paxlovid commercials. Have you seen those?
Yeah, those are not
like
good.
The person like does like a little fake cough and they're like,
yep. Yeah, no, it's
because I have COVID. Okay. Sorry. I had to shout it out.
There's like a serious problem with advertising during baseball games. And I would argue it's another instance of Major League Baseball not knowing or caring about its audience. Although, Matt, I know some of your takes seem to be about how changes made by Major League Baseball have improved the viewing experience.
Yes, I am one of the biggest pitch clock stands there is out there. I think it's the best thing, probably the only good thing that Rob Manfred has ever done, because even today I watched the Texas Rangers put up 15 runs on the Yankees and the game took 2.5 hours. It was delightful.
Well, I don't assume the Rangers putting up 15 runs on the Yankees was delightful.
No, not being there for 4.5 hours was delightful. Yeah,
that's fair.
So Matt, here's my question, because I agree the pace of play, like it's like I like the game moving quicker. I'm mostly on your side. My concern is like not watching on TV, but if you're at the game and you get up for like a concession, are you feeling like you got to run? Are you missing it? Like, does it feel like there's almost, it's all happening too quickly, or are you just, that doesn't bother you?
So that part is rough, because like today at Globe Life Field, it was an absolute war zone in the concourses because everyone decided, let's have lunch at the ballpark today. So when we went to get a hot dog, that was a little tough. But so I think that part is valid, but I think just the overall viewing, it's just so much nicer that it's just nonstop.
Glad to hear it. I mean, like, I'm on your side. I worry about the in-game experience, but it's, you know, it's the quality of play is good and it lets everyone get some time back. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to give Rob Manfred for credit, but I won't dock him points.
Yeah. I've been to a couple games this year. The ones that I went to have been like, I think not all that quick for whatever reason. Like, I went to a 6-3 game yesterday at Nats Park. Maybe like part of the reason that game was slow is because like Rich Hill, the ball just takes a longer time to get to the plate. And the Orioles Yankees game I went to, I thought was like not super fast, but yeah, I don't know. I have not felt like it was as intrusive as I thought it would be. I still don't know if I like it, but it's less intrusive than I thought it would be.
My viewing experience this year has been 6 World Baseball Classic games that you could. So I went to one Angels Mariners spring training game and it was like very noticeable even then, that one game. And then going back to World Baseball Classic baseball, there was one Great Britain Canada game that was like 4 hours because it was like 18-10 and it got mercy ruled. So I see. Yeah. Like I think I'm on your side. Well, it's like, it's not as intrusive. I'm not 100% of the way there, but like it definitely cleans after being at the World Baseball Classic. I'm like, it cleans some stuff up that probably needed to be cleaned up.
Matt, your next take.
So that was most of the takes that I had. But I did just want to articulate just kind of one of those out of body experiences I had leaving the stadium. So it was a beautiful 80 degree day, not a cloud in the sky, a slight breeze. And we're walking down the ramp outside the stadium. And like it's super green in the Metroplex right now because we've gotten a ton of rain this year. There was a country band was performing at Texas Live, which is right next to the Rangers ballpark. And you could smell the barbecue from Lockhart Smokehouse because they have a location there at Texas Live. And it was just one of those, like, minus the Yankees getting clobbered, like, this is it.
Can you imagine how good it would have felt if the Yankees had won that game and then you walked out to that? That would have been beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, before we let you go, the Yankees are 15-14. They have a +2 run differential. They are tied for last in the American League East. I'll ask you for your confidence rating in a little bit, but just, you know, having watched this team play 18 innings of extremely weird baseball, for, you know, all that you've seen from them this season, for your expectations of them, like, what have been your reactions to these first 29 games? If you are disappointed, where do you place the blame? If you are optimistic, what are you optimistic about? You know, I just like to take your temperature on this.
So it is a mixed bag because, like, I know you guys had talked about this in past episodes, but I think Volpe's obviously turned a corner. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to play like some combination of Volpe, Peraza, and Cabrera.
Mm-hmm.
And like you had said, like, the catcher position doesn't matter because Trevino is giving you such great defense. Like, obviously he hit a home run on Thursday, but
which was cool, I assume.
Yes, it was. I did not think that ball was out. I thought
it didn't look like it. It looked like it was in on his hands on TV.
That was what I thought too, because it didn't. The ball before was way harder off the bat that it went to the track.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, like, obviously, like, net zero, but it's like right now they only have three major leaguers playing in Rizzo, LeMahieu, and Glaber. So it's like, I completely agree. Like, you need to have the kids play because the last time we did that, it worked out pretty well in 2016-17.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, we're still putting out a lineup with Kiner Falefa and the worst baseball player on the planet, Aaron Hicks.
Yeah.
In it every day. And it's like, it's until guys become healthy again, it's going to be, I think it might be rocky.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Let alone the starting pitching lack of depth at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the other thing is just like, I mean, obviously the Rangers are a good team. You know, you saw them beat up on the Yankees today. The Yankees are playing one of the toughest schedules in baseball. It doesn't really look to get easier. So, like, it gets a lot better, but like you said, I think they probably need some of the guys back before you can assess. I just think people are quickly writing off a season that can, you know, like, we have seen the Yankees in a lot worse positions than this, and the guys they have are good. You know, they just need to all be healthy. I don't know. Was there anything in the game today that made you like when you're walking into the stadium and walking out, did you have any like change of like, oh, I, you know, have some different opinion now, or is it just like one of those games?
I will be interested to see how Nestor Cortes bounces back in his next start because his last two starts have not been good. So, and it's one of those things that sitting in the upper deck, I couldn't see, but it seemed like he was just a tick off with his command in the first inning that he walked a couple guys because it looked all the pitches looked real close, but at least from, you know, 1,000 feet away.
Yeah, it wasn't like totally non-competitive, but the command was definitely off. And then it felt like he started to put it back together a little bit. At least he was getting outs more effectively, but the command never fully came back. And then he allowed the couple of homers later. So Matt, last thing we'll do here is your confidence out of 10 in this team. I don't need to explain how this works to you. You've listened to the episodes. 1 to 10, the Yankees are 15-14. How are you feeling?
So I'd say right now I would put it at a 7. If guys can come back and be healthy and contribute, I think there's a lot of potential with the team, but today was a literal triple A ball. like team was put out there like yesterday too, like until, and I understand some of the guys that are playing are rookies, but until like the reinforcements come back, I think Bader coming back will be huge because I think he's kind of got a Nick Swisher spark to him.
Yeah.
And so, and that could mean that we send Aaron Hicks to the sun. But
here's hoping.
Yeah. You know, I just think, you know, it's hopefully Judge, it's, you know, he's able to come back in a week and, you know, turn it on a little bit. He started to at the end of the Minnesota series.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm happy, even though today's game was not fun, I am happy that I got to see my beloved New York Yankees twice. I do want to leave off with one funny bit.
Please.
That I'm going home to New York for a weekend in June. And I picked it of like, I'm going to a concert with my family. The Yankees are home. They're playing the Texas Rangers.
It's the only matchup you can see the Yankees play is the Yankees or the Rangers. All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Yankees Files podcast. The second straight week we've gotten to host someone's podcast debut. So I absolutely love that. And when things turn around, as you've predicted they might, we'll have you back on and you can take victory laps for all your takes.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Matt. We'll talk to you soon.
Go Irish.
Go Irish. And we are back. Whipple, I had a ton of fun talking with Matt. You know, it's something I do offline a fair amount. So it wasn't exactly new for me, but it was great to finally get him on the podcast. As we mentioned, he's been very active behind the scenes in various ways when it comes to Yankees Files. So it was nice to finally get him on the pod.
Yeah. And when he becomes head of Yes Network, marketing department, commercials, you know, we'll be able to say we knew him back when nobody.
That'll really change the world.
The man's got takes and they are, you know, as you all heard, they range in, you know, flaming hot to just very mild and about a range of topics. So definitely looking forward to having him back on again in the future.
Absolutely. So Whipple, we wrapped up Matt's interview with confidence and it's time that we get 2 hours. A lot went wrong for the Yankees this week, as we've detailed. They went 2-5. It was one of the worst weeks in the Yankees Files era. Aaron Judge got hurt. They called up Jake Bowers. He got hurt. Thankfully, while we were recording this, it broke that his MRI, Bowers' MRI, came back clean, and they don't expect to be putting him on the IL. It sounds like we'll get a decision tomorrow about if Judge will go on the IL, but they were talking about it pretty optimistically, you know, saying that maybe he would commence baseball activities today. So, you know, there's reason to be optimistic there. Severino and Rodon are both, you know, on the right track. I'm a little nervous about Jonathan Loaisiga. I'm disappointed in what I've seen from the offense. I'm not happy that so many of the big bats are slumping at once, as we discussed. That's kind of the lay of the land as the Yankees sit, despite being above 500, tied for last in the American League East. How are you feeling about this team? Has your confidence been affected?
I think it's hard to watch a 2-5 week and not have some level of confidence affected. But, you know, as we talked about, like, our belief in what this team can do is still there. The current play is definitely not contributing to what, you know, their success can be. But, like, nothing has changed my long-term outlook on the team. And, like, baseball deficits can be overcome very quickly. I think one thing that does concern me is with the new schedule, you know, there's less, I was thinking about this, like less opportunities for in-division games. So definitely a little less head-to-head opportunity, you know, to make up later in the season. But having said that, baseball turns on a dime and the Yankees have 7 games against the Rays in the next 2 weeks. And, you know, some people might be like, well, that could bury them. But also they have a prime opportunity to really make up some ground and put a lot of this early season, you know, up and down play to rest. I'll go down to an 8, and I still think that's probably higher than a lot of people. But again, like, I just don't, if everyone was out for the season or, you know, people were getting traded or people were, I don't know, like something that could not be fixed, I would be a lot more concerned. But as long as they have this core group of guys, and as long as they are, you know, they're not 5-24, they're 15-14. So like they're in this, and I feel like better times are ahead, because again, that's baseball, and that's always how it works. I cycle back to my quote at the beginning, like sometimes baseball is bad, but then sometimes it's really good, and it just happens. Like it just happens. I'm also studying for law school finals, and I have like no desire to watch this team play poorly anymore. So this is my way of being like, Yankees, you got to play better. Okay, please.
Yeah. I mean, excuse me. I agree with you. Confidence has to go down after the week that they've had, particularly amid the uncertainty about the Judge injury. It's hard not to have your confidence in the team go down. I'm going to go to an 8 as well. I still believe that this team can win the World Series. I still believe that this roster, given health, can win the World Series. And I am, you know, I have a lot of conviction in that. But it's just been disappointing to see them play so poorly. It's been disappointing to see the like development curve that some of the guys have been on has not been, has not had the trajectory that I was hoping it would have. I mentioned like the clustered slumps of the big bats. That's not something that really affects my confidence. It just makes them harder to watch. I am getting a little nervous about the sustainability of good pitching in the absence of Severino or Rodon. So I'd like to see, you know, a little more progress on the injury front from those guys, and, you know, a little more of a light at the end of the tunnel. But look, this is a very good baseball team. I'm not going to be told otherwise. And I think there's still a lot to like about them, but yeah, I'm also going to have to go from a 9-8. And look, you know, they're going to play Cleveland, Tampa, Oakland, and Tampa in the next couple weeks. And that could do a lot to change their standing in the division, and it could do a lot to change how we feel about this team in that span. They could get, should get some key players back in Harrison Bader and Aaron Judge. And I'm excited for what those guys will bring to the lineup. Whipple, before we wrap up here, any parting shots from you on this somber episode of Yankees Files?
On a happier note, friend of the pod, guest of the pod, Doug Whipple, and I have been in talks to potentially go see Jason Dominguez and the Somerset Patriots. And I said the only way I'm getting you these tickets is if you promise to come on for your annual appearance. And I noted that friend of the pod, but not as of yet guest, Cynthia Whipple is chomping at the bit for an appearance. She's asking to go to games. So I'm like, there might be, we might have the first dad take or bad take switched out for mom take. I don't know what the rhyme would be, but all of Cynthia Whipple's takes are good. So we can only assume her Yankees Files ones are too. Just, you know, a lot of churning in the waters, but, you know, could be a shakeup amid the Whipple power rankings soon enough.
Is there any chance we get a Merrily Mannerly appearance on the podcast? Is that what it was called?
I mean, that was what it was called. Only the real ones know.
All right, this is very exciting. I think appearances from either of your parents would be terrific, terrific additions to the podcast. All right, with that, we're going to wrap up this kind of first disappointed edition of Yankees Files of the 2023 season. And, you know, people know this by now, but they can find any of our written content at yankeesfiles.com. They can follow us on Twitter, where we are at Yankees Files. That's, you know, a place where you can get a little bit of everything from us. I've been pretty active on TikTok lately, where we are at Yankees Files Podcast. We'd love it if you could give us some follows there. And the podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you're enjoying it, please rate it. Maybe leave a review, subscribe, listen to it 10 times every time it comes out. Just put it on silent and listen to it on like 5x speed. It'll just make the numbers look good. And I like that. It gives me good self-esteem. Look, the Yankees have a big week coming up against Cleveland and Tampa, and we'll be back same time, same place next week to discuss it. Until then, let's go Yankees.